Hello, and welcome to a brand new episode of Databook, a Chief Healthcare Executive podcast. My name is Skylar Jeremias, and I'm an assistant editor at CHE. Today, I will be joined by Sundar Kamak, Global Head of Manufacturing at Evalua. We discuss some of the current supply chain disruptions that have manifested during the pandemic, and how technology can help solve them. We also talked about why these issues are persisting, despite life in the United States beginning to return to normal. So to start us off, could you give us an overview of how the pandemic has impacted healthcare supply chains?
Yeah, absolutely. So to start with, the healthcare supply chain, for the most part, have been constrained in the past, even before the pandemic. Right, the pandemic is just simply an extraordinary event, right, which puts undue pressure, especially on healthcare, in terms of, if you really think about supply chain, it's about demand and supply. So the demand became so high, it pretty much brought them to the knees in terms of their capacity being completely full, and also the critical items being in shortage, and that can be anywhere from masks and PPE all the way to very critical care medicines to even other things that sometimes we take for granted, like oxygen supplies, for example, right? And it didn't affect just one country. It affected pretty much many countries around the globe, and it all happened at the same time. If you really think about all the other supply chain challenges, when you have a tsunami, it affected one part of the world. If you have a fire or something happens in a port or a harbor, it's restricted to that country or that particular region. In the case of pandemic, it is global. It is global, so it does got impacts everywhere. Supply chains typically in this flat world, it's no longer limited to a particular region, right? And what it exposed is the lack of preparation, which is a little bit surprising to see, not only in private sector healthcare organizations, but also public sector healthcare organizations. It created awareness and the ability to not only plan, but also execute these plans and continue to be prepared. But it is actually one of the most challenging things ever faced by the healthcare supply chain in a long time.
As the United States continues to return to normal, what are some of the supply chain issues that we're still dealing with?
United States in general, our supply chain is dependent on, in terms of supply, on various parts of the world, right? You have materials and products coming from different parts of the world. The manufacturing facilities are very different. We also don't have the right set of policies in place. We have a lot of restrictions in terms of obtaining things from other countries or even exporting things to other countries. Even though we are relying heavily on international exports, one thing which we can solve these problems overnight. When, for example, when the majority of the PPE is actually manufactured in Far East, especially in China, and it's not about the production of the material itself, it's actually the transportation network which was shut down. That was actually one of the challenges. The second thing is, because of the way supply chain has been structured, and most of these healthcare organizations, do what's called distributor supply chain. What it means is, they work with a lot of suppliers. They bring their suppliers in different warehouses, and they stock supplies, but you have to balance how much you stock in terms of inventory versus how much you have to get just in time, because there's a fine balance. You cannot really stock everything at the same time, because then you're going to get the cost very high. So you really have to balance, and that is something most organizations are trying to find out what's the right balance. Do you need to keep 60 days of inventory? Do you need to keep 3 months of inventory? Do you need to keep five year, you know, 1 year of inventory? How many warehouses you got to be in place? Now, very big hospital chains and healthcare companies, they are not like the manufacturing companies, right? Their job is to take care of patients. Their job is not to run supply chains. So that's also one challenge we have, because if you really think about, especially in healthcare, in large IDNs or independent hospital networks, a lot of these organizations are run by folks who come from medical field, right? They're not necessarily experts in supply chain, not necessarily experts in procurement. There are obviously very large, thought leading organizations who have made changes, but it's basically planning in terms of making sure all the things you need to address, whether it's a COVID pandemic or something else coming in the future. It's all about planning, all about making sure they put the execution in place and continue to run, operate the system without really putting a lot of drain on not only the public dollars we spend on some of these organizations, but also not also the healthcare costs being very expensive, especially in the US. So you just got to balance both.
Why are these issues persisting? Is this an issue of relying too heavily on international imports, not investing enough in domestic manufacturing, or something else entirely?
If you really think about it, the issues are not just because we're relying on our national imports, right? You really have to think about how the supply chain is organized. The clinical supplies, there are capital equipment, and there is also a vaccine, which is very different. Everything is controlled by FDA, right? Everything is tightly controlled by FDA. Now, clinical supplies can be sutures to masks to PPE, right? And over the years, organizations have looked at the supply chain globally and did labor arbitrage and trying to say, okay, I can get 20% cheaper, 30% cheaper if they purchase from outside of the United States. Most companies do that because they need to keep the cost under control. Now, the other reason is there are sometimes those supplies are not available domestically. You have to rely on a third party. You have to rely, like, for example, the PPE, the N90 masks, even though manufactured by 3M, most of the manufacturing facilities are Far East. It's actually in China, right? So it exposed to critical, a link in the supply chain where it all boils down to demand and supply. So you have to digitize these processes, make sure you have all this information on single place. You got to use technology so it actually provides visibility. And then once you start having visibility, then you can start putting the appropriate steps in.
How are these supply chain disruptions directly impacting patient care?
Patient care, definitely, especially in this global pandemic, definitely got affected. I don't have to say these things. We all have read so many stories in either Time Magazine or Wall Street Journal or New York Post in terms of patients being turned away. This is still happening in growing economies like India or Brazil, simply because there's not enough supplies, there is not enough people, right? It's just not like, even if you have billion masks available and you don't have billion doctors available, right? You don't have nurses available. You don't have people who can check in available. So patient care did get affected. Obviously, we are unprepared for it. Unlike some of the Far East countries who are used to the SARS virus in the past, we were not prepared. United States especially was not prepared. We didn't expect the impact and the acceleration to be very high, right? If you like, for example, during the initial waves of infection, especially NYC got affected initially, just to find out who has got COVID, the COVID swabs are only made by two companies in the world, just two companies, right? Because we didn't even know how to test people. How do we know who has, so it all starts there, right? We, again, this is not a pandemic where we can plan ahead. There's nothing could have, but we could have actually learned from our previous exposure to other similar cases during, whether it's bird flu or Ebola or SARS. I mean, there's a lot of things happened, right, in the world. So it's just collaboration with other countries, collaboration with other healthcare professionals, other parts of the world. So we prepare these things and continue to drive some of these critical supplies needed for patient care. And if you don't have space, think about how much the opened up of, they brought an entire battleship and opened up, they put 1,000 beds there. They had ad hoc clinics in New York City where they open up, and that's everywhere. I mean, there are so many stories we have heard about people not able to get care simply because there's not enough beds, enough doctors, enough medicines, you name it.
How are supply chain issues impacting the current disparities in care? If some hospitals in wealthier areas can outbid safety net hospitals for key supplies in a health crisis, what can be done about this?
Yeah, it's a very controversial topic, but it is a social topic we all have to address, right? Whether we like it or not, I live in the city of Michigan. I live in Detroit, just 30 miles south of Detroit. Detroit is one of the cities which got affected earlier on simply because of disparities, right? The haves and have-nots, the big chasm between the people who can afford and people who don't. I'll also be honest and say COVID did not differentiate between a rich person and a poor person. It basically took care of everybody. Now, maybe if you're in a wealthier suburb, a wealthier city, you have access to a lot more, not only hospital, but more immediate care compared to people who are not in the wealthier cities, or where the hospital is not even available. Like, I know, being in Michigan, I know folks who live in outside 100 miles, 200 miles up there in the townships and villages. They don't have hospitals for 100 miles, but they can't even go anywhere. One thing we can actually do is, whether you are in a wealthier suburb or whether you are in a city, where what we can make sure is you still have the same initial setup government programs in place, because government also, this is not something private organizations can take care of. Government has to play a role in this. Can make sure that you have equal access to it. You actually have access to hospital, access to personnel, access to specialized care. So you just gotta plan for it. It takes time, but I think with the right focus in mind, it can be solved. It's been solved in other countries. There's no reason for us, and I always say, we live in the wealthiest country in the world, but we still have these disparities. It's not because we cannot solve it. We can solve it. It just simply takes policy changes, takes mindset changes, and also the ability for people to come together to make these things happen. Absolutely. And I think what has also happened is density, right? So again, in this particular pandemic, one thing we have seen is counties which are the lower strung of the society, folks who live in those counties and cities, they actually have face-to-face interaction, right? They are in groceries, they are in airports, they are interacting with people. So initially we took it easy, right? We basically said, yeah, we just put something on, it'll go away, right? We are in United States, nothing can happen, right? These things happening in Far East, right? It's not gonna come here. But that's also one thing which is also, we need to take a look at this. So I think those are all things. Part of the thing is we need to have social nets. This is something not everybody in the country is going to agree, right? Germany took care of it because Germany had the social net. If you can't go to work, the country shut down, government is willing to give them some assistance, which will take them to the next level. We did something, but it's all very ad hoc. And we were politically charged in terms of not taking care of people who need the care most, who need the help most, but we're just debating among ourselves. So,
how can hospitals begin to modernize their procurement processes to better prepare for future crises?
Hospitals, if they've not already started, it's high time they start modernizing their infrastructure. Modernizing procurement technologies, which allows them to simply get visibility first. It all starts with visibility. How many suppliers do you have in the organization? A simple question to ask yourself is, how many suppliers do I have in my organization? And you can go check the report and let you know. But if the report takes 2 weeks to generate, what good is that? So it's not going to be. So you need to have automation in place. You got to drive, automation drives visibility. Once you have visibility, then you actually continue to drive strategic planning for your critical items which are necessary for your clinical care first. And ability for you to go easily to find the suppliers, source it, and continue to put strategies in place where your optimal amount of inventory maintained. As I said, you cannot really design for this major pandemic, but you need to be well prepared. Even though you may run out of parts, like General Motors ran out of parts, but they were prepared for it because they are a manufacturing company. They always manage this. It's a very different ballgame. You know, you ask a head of the supply chain for a hospital, they'll have no idea how many days they're going to last. You ask the same question to an automotive manufacturer, high-tech company, they'll answer the question. So that mindset has to be there. So automation, ability to put modern technology, which allows them to aggregate information, collaborate with India, with different stakeholders, both internal and external. Like the person who does the trying to buy has no idea whether something is in the contract or not. They may not know the suppliers. So that's because they have no visibility into who's supplying these things, where should they get from, and how much is already in stock right now. Third thing is automating, especially a lot of the transactional aspects of supply chain. As you said, there's still a lot of paper. They still expect people to, for example, simple process around receiving a purchase order from a supplier, they still receive paper today. There's no reason to receive paper. It should be automated and continue to automate that. Invoicing. Suppliers cannot run the business. They got to be paid faster. So the working capital is not there, so which actually makes it really hard. So to net it out, hospital system and healthcare companies need to put modern procurement and supply chain system, which helps them to drive automation, helps them to drive visibility, helps them to drive better collaboration, not only internally, but most importantly with their suppliers.
How do you anticipate supply chain disruptions will change as the rest of the world gets a better handle on the pandemic?
So I think the pandemic has taught pretty much everybody in the world, big countries or small countries, to plan, not to take anything for granted. One thing which you're going to start seeing more and more is there's going to be collaboration among the countries. Because you can, and when something like this happens, you got to collaborate across different dimensions. Everybody, all humans are the same. Doesn't matter which part of the world you live in. We all breathe the same air. We all look the same. We all still have one brain. We may speak different languages, but we all want the same, right? And in those particular cases, I actually say there's a lot of onus in large countries. Advanced countries like United States, Germany, to UK, to actually lead that effort. We can't just do for ourselves. That doesn't work at all. You have to work. And I think more countries are going to be more open now to sharing data, to work with general bodies very closely and continue to manage that supply chain. So when there is a need, when there is something needed in urgency, people can come together and take care of it.
And lastly, it sounds like fixing these issues will require large investments. What will happen to smaller hospitals and health systems?
I always go back to Darwin's theory, the survival of the fittest. Just because you're small doesn't mean you cannot survive. You just got to find your niche. You just got to find out what can be done. Like if it's a small hospital and they are really efficient, they get things done, they're probably the ones to survive. Not the big ones, right? The bigger you get, there's going to be more red tape, whether we like it or not. The smaller ones are going to be very, very efficient. And I think what is going to happen, it's going to be the combination of both. You cannot have a 1,000-person bed hospital somewhere in the middle of nowhere, right? That doesn't work like that. The small hospital doesn't have to be left behind. I strongly believe it's the quality of patient care, the speed at which these hospitals respond will make the difference between whether it's a big versus small. The big is simply big because they can handle all types of any kind of disease, right? Not many hospital systems can handle oncology compared to the regular medicine or compared to urology, for example, right? So in big cities, you not only need big hospitals, but also need smaller hospitals because not everybody can wait for the big hospitals. So to me, it's not about the big or small, it's about how do you actually improve the quality of patient care? How do you make these hospitals be more forward-thinking and automate and continue to focus just on patient care? Because if you focus on patient care, a lot of these things will actually fall in place.
Thank you so much for tuning into this week's episode of Databook. Make sure you follow us on Twitter at Chief Health Exec and on LinkedIn and Facebook. Until next time, I'm your host, Skylar Jeremias.